SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour three, weekend preview at the races, and also back with us after a Del Mar and Los Al hiatus, fit and ready, fresh, on the bit, Tom Quigley. Happy New Year.
To you and all the listeners, great to be back with you, and let's face it, everybody needs a freshening, right? And it was a good freshening for me, almost 2 months. Del Mar certainly is a great meet during the fall meet. If any of your East Coast listeners have never been there, I would highly recommend it. A lot of two-year-olds make their debut down there. The turf racing is excellent, so that was a lot of fun. And then Los Al, always kind of a fun meet. You know, it's kind of quick in and out, brief. But we're back at the great race place. No place like home. We're here now for 6 months, and we got off to a great start in week number one.
That's for sure. And we talked to Brian Corner. We talked to Baffert on Wednesday to cover off the La Brea and the Malibu performances. Those certainly the highlights of the opening week and weekend. Didn't get a chance to get to Sadler. There'll be plenty of opportunity this month with John, given you know what's ahead and Costa Arenas. But Giftbox, I thought, got a tremendous ride from Rosario, who has made his presence felt immediately as expected.
He has, and I had a really good chat in the paddock just the other day with his agent, Ron Anderson, who needs no introduction to Southern California. His resume includes representing guys like Gomez, Bailey, Stevens, Antley, et cetera, et cetera. He is obviously, as you know, Steve, referred to as a super agent. So he knows his way around here, and right now it's interesting. Rosario's getting all the buzz, but when all the dust settled after week number one, who was on top but Flavian with 8 wins? Second was a real up-and-coming apprentice jockey who's riding exceptionally well on all surfaces, which is unusual for an apprentice jockey. Roberto Figueroa with 7 wins. And then in third is Rosario, and fourth is Van Dyke with four wins. So the colony certainly has more depth than it has in previous years, and that's good to see out here.
And I'm glad you mentioned the bug, and you know we're seeing a couple of good bugs in New York as well, and that's kind of fun. It always is a bit of a wild card, and the one name that isn't right now in the top five, but I think has really been born again hard, as they say, Joe Talamo.
Joe Talamo back in the Bob Baffert barn. We'll see that tomorrow when he rides Coliseum, the morning line even money favorite in the Sham Stakes. But Talamo has had a resurgence back in the Baffert barn, as I mentioned, primarily because of his agent. His agent is Scotty McClellan. For those listeners who might not be familiar with who Scotty is, he represented Chris McCarron for almost his entire career, also Alex Solis. So Scotty McClellan, let's face it, getting into the Baffert barn is key. We saw that with Martin Garcia. We've seen it with other riders as well. But right now, Talamo seems to be the third option, but he's getting a lot of choice mounts in that barn.
And we'll talk about Talamo's presence on Coliseum, too, as part of the Sham, because I thought I had a fascinating feedback from Baffert when I was at Clocker's Corner and broadcasting, you know, right at the beginning of December, you know, when I came in after Symposium and then went to Los Al for the Starlit and the Futurity, and had a nice, you know, live visit with Baffert, and he explained why Talamo was why he's got the mount on Coliseum, because he went to Talamo for his physical strength, and that, you know, this was a horse that was headstrong. And even watching on XPTV the other day, Tom, I watched that Sunday workout. And he, to me, it's a big question. I just brought this up earlier, and he looks like a horse that is going to take some, there's going to be more work necessary to get him to relax. And Baffert with me on Wednesday said he is taking a wait and see about Saturday to see if he will relax and not pull as hard as he certainly was doing on Sunday on that workout.
I saw that workout as well, Stephen. For your listeners who might not be aware of that great handicapping tool, xbtv.com shows multiple workouts from many, many horses here based in Southern California. All you need to do is go to their website, put in the search box the name of the horse you're looking for, and up will pop a series of workouts absolutely free of charge. And, you know, many of the noted clockers out here, guys like Toby Terrell and Andy Harrington, they've said the same thing that you and Bob Baffert have said. The horse is very headstrong, and you can even see that when you watch that most recent work. Kind of looks like he's kind of gawking into the grandstands a little bit. He's not really focused. He kind of has different gears where when he is focused, he's brilliant, but when he shuts it down, he's not that brilliant. So, you know, there is a forecast perhaps of some rain here in Southern California late tomorrow. I don't know if it'll impact the races, but I'm sure that's another consideration that trainer Bob Baffert is certainly considering.
Finally, before we talk about, today actually, because we do have the Stronach 5 and the Santa Anita 4th is part of the 5. It starts at Laurel today at 4:30, the Laurel 9th, the Gulfstream 9th, the Santa Anita 4th, Gulfstream 10th, and Golden Gate 5th, the maiden special weight on the grass. But before we do anything on the handicapping side looking forward, I also want you to mention the Jeff Mullins prowess, the turf success that Mullins has crafted. River Boyne was, some people feel like maybe he wasn't necessarily best in the Mathis Brothers Mile, but he prevailed. I mean, he had three horses coming at him late, but Mullins has done a tremendous job with him. And then Amandine, her Lady of Shamrock win, then she ran right back. I think that was I don't think the, running back on short rest was the issue as much as the distance with Amandine. But, those were races worth noting. And also, under the radar, Vladimir Sarin with Fahan Mura in the Frankel.
Fahan Mura, very brilliant speed type of horse. Perhaps look for her maybe in the new race at Gulfstream Park on Pegasus World Cup Day. Stay tuned for more information on that. But you talked about Jeff Mullins, Steve, and certainly the resurgence of Jeff for his turf racing comes with the affiliation with Red Baron Barn. All of the horses that you mentioned, whether it's Amandine, yep, River Boyne, or others, all were fresh imports from Europe. And it's interesting, the strategy they have is they run the very first race off the plane without any sort of workouts in Southern California. Then Jeff's able to tighten them up a little bit, and it actually seems like they improve. And you mentioned Amandine running the American Oaks. I thought one of the more brilliant performances on opening week was the winner of the American Oaks, Competition of Ideas, from the Chad Brown barn. What a devastating turn of foot. She's lightly raced. She's now a Grade 1 winner. I expect to hear big things from her in 2019.
I also want to slip in the two-year-old performance, that Giza Goddess. Certainly unusual for John Sheriffs to have a youngster, this keyed up early. But if you didn't see Giza Goddess win the Blue Norther the other day, and Carolyn Connolly, who has taken the book for Brice Blanc and got Blanc on Giza Goddess. And that's a filly worth following, a Cairo Prince product.
You know, Brice Blanc is such a good turf rider. You think back to 10 or 15 years ago, he was riding a lot for Bobby Franklin. I remember him shipping out to Monmouth Park and riding the United Nations for Bobby and other mounts around the country as well. So Brice doesn't get a lot of mounts, but Carolyn is a very, very much a hustling type of agent. She did great work with Stuart Elliott. Now she's got her hands on Brice. And I expect her to get Brice and more barns, just like with the John Sheriff's barn. That's a combination you don't see very often historically, but Carolyn has a good way about herself. And I'm sure that now that she has her hands on a very good marketable product like Brice, she'll open up some more doors for him.
Well, and we talked to Proctor the other day after the win by Caribou Club. And Proctor, I guess we could use as the segue into the weekend, because the San Gabriel, it may not completely go through him, but he's certainly got a strong pair going in.
San Gabriel goes as race 7 tomorrow, Steve, and like I said, just pay attention to the weather forecast, particularly during the races themselves, maybe as you're preparing some of your handicapping analysis, as you normally would, maybe take a look to see if there's any horses that might prefer either a yielding or off the turf type of situation. But Chicago style, I watched his last replay, and I was there in person to see his win in the Hollywood Turf Cup. You have the racing form in front of you. Not only did he break from an outside post, he had absolutely no fractions to run at. And he was devastating coming down the lane. He had a quick turn of foot. But it's interesting, when you look at the San Gabriel's field in totality, there's not a lot of early speed in the race. As a matter of fact, there's no confirmed pace setter, which a lot of times kind of muddles up the shape of the race itself, right? Because, again, the fractions could be slow. Position is going to be important, where not only in terms of how wide you might be, but how close you are to the pace. So I think that makes this race maybe a little bit more difficult than what it appears on paper. Certainly you have to give a long look to Liam the Charmer, who obviously was disappointing in the Breeders' Cup turf at Churchill Downs, but that was over a good surface. You can see he absolutely adores a firm surface here at Sanita. 4-for-8 lifetime in his career. He's got a lot of class. Flamboyant, always fires a big shot. Chicago style, of course, is one of the contenders. But be careful, like I said, when you're handicapping this race, because the pace scenario seems to be muddled at best.
I thought the other. Yeah, we're used to talking about the other Baffert, but I thought that the other Proctor was okay in here as well. So I and he made a point with me on Wednesday of mentioning Big Bend. So I think this, because we talked about blinkers, had a conversation, Tom, that started with Coroner about Spiced Perfection. And, you know, she was improving as the year was going on, and then she made quantum progress once the hood went on. And we let Brian, him riff on, you know, on his use of blinkers. And then I asked Baffert the same question and Proctor. So it came up with Big Bend. I thought this was a really fun race, and of course the Exeters from the Breeders' Cup involved here as well. Let's turn to the Sham, and I see that Jay Privman, who's going to join us in a little bit. Jay, actually addressing what you and I just talked about with some quotes from Joe Talamo about Coliseum not being a finished product, but there's also the two grays to deal with: Gray Magician for Peter Miller and Eclipse, and Gunmetal Gray for Hollendorfer. Your thoughts on the Sham?
Well, no doubt Coliseum is going to be the favorite and certainly the horse to beat. I'm not sure, though, that I'm going to get involved paramutually with Coliseum for a number of reasons that we spoke about. But let's talk about the positives about Coliseum for a moment, if we can, Steve. First of all, I would encourage your listeners to go back and watch the replay of his debut down at Del Mar. But specifically, don't watch him as he's running the race. Watch him on the gallop out, because it sure looks like he wants more distance. And typically when trainers debut horses at 7 furlongs, which is what Coliseum did, the trainers are kind of hinting that they're going to want 2 turns down the road. And every visual aspect of his debut certainly gave me indications that he would want to go 2 turns. Again, keeping in mind his mental limitations at the moment. Also, his final time. His final time that day was 0.38 seconds faster than the Bob Hope winner, who happened to be another Bob Baffert runner by the name of Mucho Gusto. So the fact he demolished his competition by 6 lengths, was never really asked for any run, galloped out superbly and stopped the clock faster than a Grade 3 stakes winner, tells me that he's got a tremendous amount of intrinsic talent. But having said all that, all you need to do is go back and look at Savagery in the Bob Hope. You can see that he finished a close second to Mucho Gusto. He's bred for an off-surface in case it comes up that way. He's got the highest Tomlinson wet figure in the field. Blinkers go on. He gets Rosario. He's a much better price right now at 10-1 on John White's morning line. I think Coliseum's going to get hammered at the window. And because of that, I think you kind of have to price shop a little bit. Look at them on the track. Pay attention to what's happening as far as what's happened earlier in the day from any potential bias standpoint. Coliseum, very, very talented, but I think likely to get way over bet, Steve.
Yeah, I think that if you're playing the multis, I think you got to be a little defensive. I mean, if he wins by open lengths, will you be surprised? No, but there's a few kind of fluttering questions associated. Anything else on this card that jumped at you? There's a couple of nice allowances, and we've got the maiden group coming down the hill as well, and there's some nice pedigrees, including Gary Mandela with the sibling Voluble, the sibling to Silencio.
Yes, that's the best race by far on the card, Steve. I believe it goes as race number 5, and right now the morning line favorite at 3-1. Voluble, if you go back and watch the replay, made a big menacing move as they were just getting ready to cross the turf. It looked like he was going to blow right on by the competition, and then Talamo couldn't get any more run out of him. He kind of hung a little bit. Now we haven't seen him for a couple of months, but like you said, the contention goes deep. You know, D'Amato does this a lot, particularly with number 11, I believe it is, Cachiro. Cachiro has had 2 prep races on the dirt, and now he goes sprinting on the down-the-hill turf course. He's kind of an old-school type of guy, right, where he likes to get his horses ready, kind of not ask them for a lot of run, and then when he's ready to pop third time out, that's when he's really going to ask the horse for the best run. So I'm actually referring to number 8, Mutineer, D'Amato's other runner. But he's had those 2 prep races coming on the main track. Now he's going to come down the hill. I've seen this time and time again from the D'Amato barn. He's certainly a contender to look at in what I consider to be the best race tomorrow, the 5th race on the card.
You know, in that 5th race, I'll point out, it's funny, I pointed out a horse at Gulfstream in the Turf Maiden in the Nightcap on Saturday. And here, this is also an English channel, curiously. Happens to be the 2, Dan Blacker sends out Hackberry for Calumet, a Calumet homebred. This is a sibling of Dynatail, the nice stake winner from Mike Denny. And I think you're going to probably get double digits on Hackberry debuting here. And there's not a lot to go on. I'm anxious to see what Andy Harrington will have to say tonight when National Turf posts. But Hackberry, I put my little dollar sign on as an interesting firster in here on a pedigree play.
One of 2 firsters in the race trained by Dan Blacker, drawn inside Hackberry. That's always a difficult assignment coming down the hill. But the interesting aspect about Hackberry is not just the pedigree, Steve, but the jockey, Andrea Andini, I believe is how it's pronounced, European jockey who has come to Southern California to winter here, has the services of agent Matt Nakatani, the son of Corey Nakatani. They haven't gotten up the schneid yet, but Andrea certainly has won a lot of Group 1 races in Europe. He's a name that's not well recognized by North American racing fans, but he's another welcome addition to the Southern California colony.
And, you know, he has, most notably, I mean, for those that were following, you know, the E.P. Taylor, the Canadian International races in the fall at Woodbine, he came up and won the Pattison, he won the International, and he won either one of the other races too. He had a big day at Woodbine. He can ride. He'll find his form at Seney.
And you know that time to strike is early on before he's well recognized by any of the punters. And so you know the fact that he has talent is kind of a hidden commodity that most racing fans won't know about. They'll look at the name and basically say, "Who's he?" But those in the know, like you just said, Steve, know that he can ride.
Finally, for Sunday, quick hit on the girls' race. We got the Santa Ynez, and a couple of familiar players come back to start their 3-year-old year.
Well, a rematch of Bellafina and Mother, who ran 1-2 in the Del Mar Debutant in early September down at Del Mar. You'll remember we spoke about this late in the year last year, Steve. That particular surface on that particular day was extremely slow, and you can see that in their final quarter-mile fractions. They basically stumbled home in 15 seconds. It looked like they were struggling, but lo and behold, it turned out to be a function of the track surface itself. It was just one of those days where the track was really deep and tiring and really difficult on a lot of the runners. So I'm not sure we can draw much from that particular race, but at the same time, I can tell you, although Mother, in my opinion, is likely to be the favorite, at all sprint distances so far on the main track at Santa, the inside post is just 1 for 26. And that makes sense, right? Because if you've been watching the races for the first week, most of the winners have not been positioned on the main track down inside. It doesn't necessarily mean they've been rally wide types. It's just that the rail post position is very difficult to overcome. We've talked about blinker moves. Baffert takes the blinkers off Mother. He hits at a 50% wing clip from a 12 race sample size doing that. So I respect her. I respect her intrinsic ability. I think the winner is likely to come from one of those 2 runners. But I do think Bellafina drying just slightly outside of Mother could be the difference come the finish line.
Well, in addition to the stake feature, the Santa Ynez, the seventh, came up a really good race. For those that haven't had a chance to look at Sunday, you've got Super Sol coming back for Baffert and the Zayats. You've got Surfing Star, who may be a star in the making after the Open Company win in November for Bruce Headley. And this is a surf cat. A cowbred that has got something extra. Kershaw shows up in here. Air Vice Marshall for Doug O'Neill. Pepe Tono and All Out Blitz. And this is a really good mile second level allowance. Goes as the seventh.
And if that wasn't enough action for us with the Stronach 5 today, all the two graded stakes races tomorrow, and then, like you said, a good card on Sunday. Keep in mind, besides the Beat the Host online tournament tomorrow, there's another tournament available at ExpressBet that you can also play on track at San Anita. It's a $1,500 tournament. $1,000 goes to live bankroll. $300 goes to the NHC. $200 goes to prize money. It's an NHC super qualifier. For every 15 entries that either ExpressBet and or San Anita gets, one NHC seat will be awarded. So one out of every 15 entries will win a seat to the NHC. And it's a player's choice type of tournament, Steve. You can either, if you've double qualified this year already, which means you've qualified the maximum number of times, if you happen to be one of those lucky 1 in 15 qualifiers, you can elect to qualify for next year, effectively 2020. So I would encourage everybody who is an avid tournament player to get involved either on track or at Santa Anita. It's all the Santa Anita races, plus Gulfstream Park races 8 through 11. And it's a real simple format. 50 to win place on 10 different races of your choice. That's it. There's no exotic wagering. Nobody can go all in at any point. It's just a simple 50 win place format on 10 races of your choice. Should be a lot of fun both on track and at ExpressBet.
Well, and the expectation with these super qualifiers, of course, we had the one last week in New Orleans, figure at least 10 seats. The expectation is there'll be at least 150 participating. So 10 seats, big opportunity for those that are still looking to win their way to Vegas. And Tom, I, as always, appreciate it. Great to get going in the new year. Wish you and all the players and everybody who avails themselves of Tom's VIP concierge service at Santa Anita a fabulous year.
Look forward to seeing you at the great race place real soon, Steve, and have a great weekend and enjoy the racing here from Santa Anita.
Thank you. Quigley's Corner on Twitter. Tom Quigley, folks, does a tremendous job. And, you know, that concierge service that Tom basically crafted, and anybody heading out there, if you're a player, get a hold of Tom and he will take care of you, him and Nate Newby and the staff, especially for contest play. You've heard Pete and Jonathan and Nick Tamaro talk about it. You'll be treated like kings and queens and princes. We will take a timeout here. Ed DeRosa is going to join us next, and that worked out okay, actually, for Ed, because he was busy earlier anyway. And then Jay Pribman, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard, too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on SiriusXM Radio.
Races. This is Beirut, and I heard a new, over Christmas, over the last like 2 weeks, I heard a new song by Beirut. I'm glad you played that, Kay, because I want to go find what that, I forget what it was. So I'll go seek that out. And Ed DeRosa joins us, EJXT2, off of a festive Christmas season with the Twins and Eddie 3, and it must have been mayhem. Happy New Year.
It was. Happy New Year, Steve. Good to see the joy of the holiday envelop the kids. That was fun, and made it up to Cleveland. Finally got some pizza that I remember from my childhood. So definitely a winning holiday season.
Really nice. Well, we're off and running, and part of the new year means house cleaning of the old year. And tomorrow, in fact, less now than 24 hours, they'll have the finalists announced. And I there's real potential for me to castigate you here, Ed. I'll let you you participated in the big reveal. It's become Eclipse Spallet reveal season as much as anything. Some thoughts about how things shook out in your mind.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing the finalists. I mean, I guess older female is maybe one of the more debatable, and older turf male for that matter. Definitely some of the two categories that I have no idea where the winner will end up. But horse of the year, it does seem, just from the straw polls of people who've released their ballots, Justify is going to take that. I did vote for him. I'm definitely a Triple Crown guy, as discussed 3 years ago with American Pharoah. I just value it as the accomplishment in our game and reward it accordingly. I was talking on the call-in show last night with Anthony Stabile. To me, that third Triple Crown, or the third Classic win to get the Triple Crown, is probably the biggest difference in a horse's resume versus any other race you can win to add on to your resume. Like a dual Classic winner, I mean, Justify
he wouldn't even be in the horse of the year discussion this year against Accelerate if he'd only won two of them, even with the Apollo Curse. And even if he'd won the Haskell, I don't think that would have been enough, or even the Travers. But the Triple Crown just, to me, is what the breed strives for, and he did it, and that's how I vote. I don't say that thinking everyone should feel that way. That's part of what makes the electorate fun, is we all bring our perspectives and levels of prestige to each race, and for me, the Triple Crown is the king. So I went with Justify in that regard. But on a somewhat more pessimistic note, top to bottom, I did think this was maybe one of the lighter years that we've had, even this century. But very much, having said that, looking forward to seeing Game Winner, Jaywalk, Newspaper of Record, Monomoy Girl, Enable, all running this year. So some things to look forward to, but not a lot I think I'll miss about last year, to be honest.
I hear you, and I did see some people, you know, echoing that sentiment about the overall depth of satisfaction. I guess what I've got to ask about Ed, because I'm really yesterday I did something a little out of character for me, and I just I just ripped the abstention crowd, as it happens, we touched on, Sid Fernando and I touched on the owner side, and I saw, you know, from a couple of places, you and you included, on the owner side, sort of a protest abstention, calling for wider revelation of percentage of ownership. Give us your take on the on the abstaining decision making, because I got a problem with it.
Sure. Well, I'll address the owner, because I abstained in three categories and all for somewhat different reasons. The owner one, as I said, I'm a straight ticket Triple Crown voter. In 15, it was Espinoza, Baffert, Zayat, and American Pharoah, and this year, same thing: Smith, Baffert, Gunther, Justify. The owner, I definitely, you know, could see a case elsewhere, but because I'm a straight ticket person, I had a hard time writing any one owner from the Justify camp down, and I felt like the menagerie of people who had a stake in the horse and some of the nonsense, I shouldn't say nonsense, but just some of the consternation maybe among those who had leased the racing rights and what that meant is their role as an owner, just complicated it too much for me to either put all entities down or a single one. And I felt like going in any other direction would have kind of betrayed, for lack of a better word, my willingness to support a Triple Crown winner in all categories, so I abstained from the category as a whole.
That's interesting, and I can to some degree. I mean, I get what you're saying with that, because I boiled down to four entities, three individuals, and Team Justify, and ultimately, because I, with my ballot, I'm looking to reward as many people appropriately as possible, as many stakeholders that can be acknowledged, and so, in part, you know, because I went Justify for Horse of the Year, I elevated Costa Aronis and Aronis Racing as owner of the year, and you know, Costa won more than, you know, and Pete won more than just with Accelerate, and they had the kind of year that to me is acknowledgeable. What I have seen, though, is this call for revealing percentages. There, to me, it's none of our business. I'm not, if Bill Lawrence and Seth Klarman are a partnership, they're a partnership. And whether it's 50-50 or 70-30 or 95.5, I don't care. It's not my business. And to me, if Sol Kumin and his partners wanted to be, wanted all their names involved and all the revelation and all the percentage, then they would operate that way. To me, it's a little intrusive and a little presumptuous, frankly, that people are calling for, we have to know. No, you don't. No, you don't. The order of the names on the ownership line, it indicates who is the principal owner, and then it decreases from there. You don't need to know more. I'm finding that, you know, thinking just utterly bizarre. And people that have said, oh, I can't vote for owner because I don't, just stop. There are so many people worthy of acknowledgement. The Peter Brants of the game and the Seth Klarmans and the Costa Aronises, that we don't have to go, you know, finding new controversies.
I agree with that, and I'm glad to hear it directly, because that definitely shaped how I could have presented my abstention better. My only one specific counter to that with Sol, and it wasn't this year, but last year he did, or at least indirectly through surrogates, lobby for consideration for the award. And I think when you aggressively put yourself out there, it's fair to say, or ask anyway, okay, well, how involved are you actually? That said, I do not agree with the, you know, some convention or some people making the argument or lamenting, you know, that the days of, you know, the Phipps or Claiborne are by us. Like, that doesn't bother me at all that the guy wants to buy into horses. I don't care if you bred the horse, if you buy it as a two-year-old, if you claim it like Lava Man and turn it into a grade one winner, if it's your money, you're in the game, and I'm going to respect that when it comes time for my participation
exactly.
in voting. But I do think if you lobby and you know, put your name out there or others do it for you, that is where in my head I say, okay, well, my question is then let's see how involved you are. And I say that from a thinking, and I think West Point has experienced this as well, not recently maybe, but they've had some very, very good years that get parsed in the statistics because they take on partners and are willing to share the experience, which is great, and I do think they miss out. So it may be saying, oh, we need to know percentages. You know, hearing your argument against that, I it's hard for me to disagree with you because it is business, and that, you know, can be private or as public as the owner wants. I agree with you there. But I do think just some sort of accountability for these groups that do want to lobby for the award, where we, you know, have a sense of how involved they are in the process, I don't think is unfair once they put themselves out there. So. And that just was the struggle with the owner, because I do think what Justify Accomplished merits all the awards that, you know, they're eligible for. But I just had a difficult time. You know, is it Team Justify? Is it Windstar for putting it together? Is it China Horse Club for all they've accomplished in such a short time? So I just punted.
Now, as to the lobbying efforts, it was tawdry and unseemly, and frankly, I think there was a predictable backlash to it. And Jay Hovde had the most appropriate response, which was, if you want to be acknowledged as the owner, well, then operate in a. You know, an ownership entity fashion that makes it very apparent, you know, of your involvement, as opposed to, you know, the different, and we understand that there's these groupings of different people that operate within. Listen, Sol is wonderful. The more Sol Kumins we can have come to the game, the better, because he is totally exuberant and just a delight, and has so much fun coming to the racetrack and all that. It by no means is it specifically you know, a reaction to Saul, because he's wonderful. But when we've got Peter Brandt's and Seth Klarman's and Costa Hironas's and Charlotte Weber's, we don't have to go panning for, you know, for some manufactured ownership acknowledgement. I'm sorry, there's stakeholders that have put, I mean, just outlandish amounts of money, time, and effort and into the game, who, you know, frankly deserve the attention first and foremost. It's just a reality. I don't even think it's that hard to comprehend.
One issue a lot miss, and this is more certain industry brand standpoint, and one story I wish we told better is, you know, you mentioned the money and effort and blood, sweat, tears, et cetera, they put in. And one thing I think that's sometimes overlooked on a practical level is all those efforts that they put in employs a lot of people and has people working and ideally in a safe environment, at the racetrack. And the good owners, and we saw it, I forget who first posted it, the party that Ronis and Sadler threw for the crew. I mean, that seeing stuff like that makes you realize that they're the good ones, involve everyone and sort of rise the boats with their tide, and that's all good to see. Yeah. And I think it's overlooked a lot that, yeah, they're having fun, they're enjoying it, but that money they put into it is more about buying horses. They're employing people and helping keep our economy going, and that's a story that racing needs to do a better job telling.
Well, Ed, let me switch gears. I got Jay Pribman standing by, and let's get a couple of ideas for the weekend. I'm sure you got a play or two.
Yeah, I'll go quick. I like the 2 3-year-old races. Looking forward, obviously, to Coliseum, and he's undoubtedly the Derby prospect. We're looking to see what happens out of the Sham. But Savagery's the horse I'm going to play around with in the verticals. I think he has an edge to be up front. Maybe Coliseum just blows the doors off him, gate to wire like he did in his maiden win. But to me, then Savagery's sort of the second speed. And I could see him sticking around, or maybe it's the reverse, where he's out in front, sort of a lone lead, because Joe Talamo is just waiting on Coliseum, sort of what we saw when Justify beat Fulfiore. He just, Mike Smith sat and then just kicked on, and it was, easy does it. So, but I could see Savagery sticking around in that case, too. So he's sort of my play with Coliseum. Gunmetal Gray, looking forward to the comeback, but can't use them with Coliseum or the two chalk. So Savagery is sort of the play to key underneath. And then the Mucho Macho Man, got to play against Code of Honor off the bench. Just have too much respect for those Florida-based horses. Garter and Ty has run some decent numbers. Trophy Chaser, some signs of life against Improbable. New pace top on predictive form, so that intrigues a little bit. And Well Defined's a horse I actually really liked in the Breeders' Cup, and that didn't work out. But all three, to me, offer an alternative to a horse who's going to get bet. And Jerkin's Maiden looks interesting, too, but he's the morning line maker seems to think he's going to take some money. So I'll go local on the Mucho Macho Man and try to beat the favorites.
Fair enough.
So, and then real quick in the Panzeretta, I'm going to run back my Brad Cox horse, who kicked off the Turfway meet in good style.
Yes, for us. I saw that.
Yeah, I think she definitely fits.
Goldberry.
Goldberry. Needs to improve a little bit on the turf fig, but second off the layoff and getting Florent Giroux, and it looks like we're getting the right price with the money going to the outside. So, going to run it back.
I looked at the Panzeretta. It's another big field. The racing has been fabulous at the fairgrounds when the weather cooperates. And
exactly.
Goldberry, she jumped right off the page. So, and I thought of you. So it's funny that you pulled that out. Ed, I appreciate it. And we will talk next week.
All right, looking forward to it. And James is going to be down at fairgrounds in 2 weeks for the LeCompte. So we're ramping up our coverage and looking forward to it.
Outstanding. DeRosa, everybody, EJXD2, will stay right here because Jay Privman is standing by. And Jay, it's going to be a home and home for Jay because he's joining us now. And then he'll join us Monday because the reveal tomorrow, of course, of the finalists for the Eclipse Awards. That's Jay's bailiwick at the Daily Racing Form, America's Turf Authority, since
Marty McGee was born. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Jay! Fresh from a nice honeymoon and ready for the road to the Triple Crown at the Daily Racing Form, featuring new interactive PPs, which I haven't even talked about yet, but I'm getting the feel for them. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I really like the new web design. There's a lot of material on there. I found it easy to find, very navigable. There's a lot of tabs, and I think if you just take, you know, a half hour or so to look through it. Finding the news is really easy as well. I just am really gone through a few permutations, but I like where we're at here now.
It's really cool because the stuff pops up right in, you know, per, if you go to a race like these three-year-old races this weekend, it all just sort of tumbles into your lap.
Yeah, no, I think I'm really happy with the way it turned
nice.
Out.
Nice. Well, we'll save the Eclipse stuff for Monday, and after you've written up the finalist portion, and let's do what we do and talk about the 3 year olds. It's underway. The Jerome got things kicked off, and I saw you did the expanded comments already.
Right. Yeah, I did that the day after. Try and do those as quickly as possible, and they'll do the same for the Sham this weekend. But Mind Control won that race, and like I wrote in the analysis, I don't think there was a whole lot of depth to the field. I'm not really sure how far Mind Control wants to run. The thing that I did like about him is that I thought every time a horse came to him, he had more left, as though he was waiting on horses. But the jury's still out for me about his two-turn ability. He's only run one swing two turns. It was in the Breeders' Cup. He ran poorly, but he had legitimate excuses. He had missed the Breeders' Futurity, and he had gotten sick, and he just didn't really get a fair chance that day. But my gut feeling tells me he's going to be better down the line around one turn than two, but we'll find out more when he runs in the Withers next month.
Absolutely. And before we talk about the upcoming this weekend, I'm sure you had a chance to catch up and check out Improbable's performance in the Futurity. I had a lot of fun at Los Al, and boy, he only has gone from strength to strength so far.
Well, he's always been really highly regarded, and as I wrote in the recap, I mean, he's done nothing wrong so far. He's a big, strong horse, and I think he's obviously, he'd be on anybody's short list of top Derby contenders right now off what we've seen from him in his three starts so far.
Yeah, it was an impressive performance, and it was a big day for the blue and gold of Team Baffert. Jay, let's look to the weekend and the Sham, of course. Here's Baffert with another player, in fact, two, with Coliseum, and it looks like, and I saw you put those quotes up from Talamo, he really seems anxious. I watched on XBTV, I watched that workout from Sunday. He's in the bridle, boy, on the backstretch.
No, he pulls very hard, and that was one of the things that I wanted to see how he did when he ran in a race. And he ran the one time at Del Mar, and he was a lot better in the race than he's been in the mornings, and hopefully that'll continue for him because he's going to need to relax and finish in his races. This will be a big step. He won a maiden sprint at Del Mar, and now he faces winners and goes two turns, and more real estate for him to show that he can relax and finish. But one of the things that they've done with him is, Talamo worked that horse a lot before his debut, obviously became familiar with him, rode him in the race, and has continued to work him since. So there's a real familiarity there with between horse and rider, and hopefully that'll pay off down the line. That's the intent, and so far it's worked, but I think tomorrow will be a real good test to see if he can maintain his composure the early part of the race, because that's one of the reasons he wasn't rushed back into the Futurity. They didn't want to jam him back on 3 weeks' rest. Thought it'd be beneficial for him to have a little more time between his debut and his second race and not kind of overcook him. And now we'll see the results of that tomorrow.
In addition, of course, to Coliseum making this two-turn debut, we do have the return of Gunmetal Gray out of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, who did finish fifth. He got the last major check in the Juvenile. Gray Magician makes a second start for Peter Miller. This is a horse that Eclipse jumped into. Hector Palma had him with his debut. In fact, Palma owned him, and Eclipse joined the team, and now Adam Wachtel and Gary Barber are involved, and then there's the other Baffert. What's the rest of this field look like to you?
Well, Gray Magician, you didn't get a big fig in that race. You got an 80, but I like the race a lot. As you mentioned, it was his first start for Miller. It was his first start going two turns, and he won his much best. So I want to see if he can continue to take a step forward, but he needs to on his buyer fix. But I liked his race a lot. I thought it was a really good performance. And one of the benefits of a horse like him or Gunmetal Gray as compared to Coliseum, not only is the number of races that they've run, but they've both got two-turn experience, which Coliseum doesn't. So that's why I just think it's a really good test for Coliseum. Gunmetal Gray is an interesting horse, Steve. He ran a decent enough race, I thought, in the front runner. He was just second best on the day. And then in the Breeders' Cup, as you mentioned, he finished fifth. I thought he kind of ran in spots in the race. There were times where he seemed like he was into it. There were times where he seemed disinterested. And then he finished up decently enough. And he just looks to me like a horse who might need blinkers. And they haven't gone on yet. I'm really curious to see how he does tomorrow. And if he continues to sort of run tomorrow as he did in the Breeders' Cup, what potential equipment change there might be for him. That's one of the things I mentioned in the analysis of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, that I thought he had run in spots and might need blinkers. And it's just something I've got my eye on. It's one of the things I try and do in some of those analysis, is just to point out little nuggets about either equipment or changing leads or distance aptitude to try and give you a little more than when you start to look at some of the also-rans as to what might be something to look for going forward. So that's kind of my assessment of him. I want to see if he takes a step forward. I think he might need a little more help equipment-wise.
Well, Peter Miller has got a second horse in here as well. And Keith DeSormo, we should at least mention. Maybe there's a new My Boy Jack to be found.
Well, he's got, DeSormo has two in here. Miller has two in here. Baffert has two in here. DeSormo's horses, I think, are a little bit overmatched in this spot, both Easy Shot and Sueno. I think they're going to need to take big steps forward. So I don't know what to make of Savagery. He kind of overreacted to some minor traffic into the first turn of the Cash Call Futurity, and they are putting blinkers on him, so hopefully that'll help him to do better. I still am not sure, though, whether he wants one turn or two. I thought his race in the sprint at Del Mar in the stake there was probably his best race.
Well, down in Florida, Shug gets Code of Honor back involved in that Mucho Macho Man, Jay. Some people seem to be lining up against Code of Honor. I'm just happy that Shug's got him right and ready to go.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how he does. To me, it's a good starting point for the new year. We know he got sick and had to miss the Breeders' Cup, in which he would have been one of the top choices in the race. And it looks like he's had a pretty steady work pattern over the last month down at Pace and Park, which is where Shug spends the winter. And he got a work in at Belmont even after the Breeders' Cup before he went down to Pace. And so it looks like he's trained right along. And to me, it's a means to an end. Maybe he won't win, but he's certainly on paper the one to beat. But there are a couple of local horses who I think are worth noticing, worth looking at here. The horse that intrigues me the most is Trophy Chaser of the potential upsetters, because I thought he ran a better-than-looked effort in the Champagne. He had a little bit of traffic trouble, and then he came back and he ran, I thought, a good race against Improbable in the street sense. And he'll be forwardly placed, and I think he's got a chance to run a lot better in there. And I don't know what to make of Well-Defined. He's the thing that'll benefit him is he's back at the track where he ran a freakish performance in Reality in September, and he just he ran horribly in the Breeders' Cup, and I went back and watched the race again, and like I wrote in the race recap of that, I just didn't really see a whole lot of excuse for him there, and maybe the excuse was just that he was overmatched, but he's back where he's certainly run his best races, and I could see him potentially improving in that race. And so even the other horse I'm kind of interested in seeing if he can take a step forward is Jimmy Jerkins called Mios.
Yeah.
He's drawn outside. I'm sure 6 furlongs is well short of optimum for him, and that's all he's done in his first couple races. Now he gets to run a one-turn mile, which I think should be right up his alley. And his last start was his first with Lasix, and he came out of a super live maiden race in his debut at Belmont. So I think he's got a chance to move forward off of that. So there's a few horses in here that I think are worth potentially, you know, could have some decent potential down the line. And I think there's a little more depth in here than it might look initially at first glance with just 6 horses in the field.
Agreed. And speaking of 6 horses in a field, earlier in the day at Gulfstream, a reminder of that third race, the 7-furlong maiden special group, including the firsters, Jad Brown for Seth Klarman, the Tappet out of Wild Vision, the $300,000 bay, who's actually already gelded. And then there is the Bolt Doro sibling, the Curlin Colt for Sagamore and Windstar. Global Campaign, Stanley Huff maybe back on the Triple Crown trail.
Well,
love it.
Stanley Huff firsters have been super live over the years, so I'd be very interested to see how that horse runs first time out, because he's about as good as you get when sending out newcomers.
A great first Saturday of 2019, a great first visit of 2019 for Jay Pribman. We'll be back with Jay on Monday for his impressions of the finalists for the Eclipse. They'll be announced 23 hours from right now. Jay, let's make it a great new year.
Indeed. Back at you. 2019.
I appreciate
it. Hope it's a good one.
DRF Privman, everybody, and we'll send you out into the race day. Back with you Monday. Really get the year rolling in earnest. We'll talk to Jay and hopefully to Johnny D, who's been ailing, and winners from the weekend. Good luck. Talk to you Monday.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Yeah, Express Bet. Give me 12 grand to win on the 9 at Gulfstream. Yeah, that's what I said. 12 grand. 12,000 smackaroos. 12,000...
Mikey! Hang up the phone! You crazy? You can't bet that much.
Quiet, Joey. I'm practicing.
Practicing? Practicing for what? Divorce?
No, I'm practicing my Pegasus Big Bet with my friends at ExpressBet.
Ooh, the contest is back?
And better than ever. All you gotta do is register for free at ExpressBet.com. Then you'll earn entries for every bet you make until January 14th. The more you play, the more chances you have to win.
And you win a $12,000 bet on the Pegasus?
And a VIP trip to Gulfstream with airfare, hotel, tickets, it's all included. Now if you'll excuse me, I got some more practicing to do.
Yeah.
So, ExpressBet, you still there? Good. Like I was saying,
ExpressBet is the official online wagering partner of the Pegasus World Cup. Visit ExpressBet.com to bet today. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after
After this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Hi, John Pirana here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.